Mini episode 1060 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1060. Back today with one of our favorite guests. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We are here to break down the 2018 midterms and what has already gone on in the time since. We are somewhere in the ballpark of about 48 hours after the final results were coming in as we are taping this. And again, final results at this point still being tabulated in a handful of places around America. Again, few things are more fun on this show than when myself and ePolitics.com proprietor Colin Delaney are getting together to break things down from our, shall we say, disparate political perspectives here. Me as America's favorite paleocon, and Colin Delaney from a point left of that on the spectrum, let's just say. And I'm sure we will have some interesting notes to compare as we jump into this. So a wild one to certainly recap here, Colin. And my sense in looking at this here in a lot of ways, it feels kind of anticlimactic, because I look at this and the first two words that spring to my mind are split decision. And that's something we're not used to seeing in our elections.
Oh, hey, Rick. Well, first, let me just say I'm very glad to be able to call your bunker from my bunker. You know, we can have sort of a bunker-to-bunker talk.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I think definitely, I mean, a lot of liberals had got their hopes way up. I knew I should not have gotten my hopes up as high as they were. But, and you're like trying to tell yourself, you know, don't expect too much. But, you know, having the Florida and Georgia not look good early in the evening really was, deflating to a lot of Democrats.
Yes.
But here's the thing. You look at those numbers, and, the Dems will probably, you know, once the California races shake out, get 33 or 35 seats, somewhere in that range. They squeeze by in Montana. I think, isn't Arizona still open as we're talking? But, you know, I would assume that one will end up Republican.
Yes.
But, you know, anybody looking at the voter enthusiasm surveys and just looking at the Senate map, which was the worst map for a party in something ridiculous, like 60 or 80 years, if you could have predicted this right on in February and March, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had all of this Sturm und Drang, you know, all of this endless back and forth, and, you know, most pundits looking at the fundamentals of the moment would have picked basically about what happened.
I think that's
right?
True, yeah.
And if you look at the popular vote for what it's worth, I mean, skewed by places like California, of course, about 54% of the electorate voted for Democrats, about 45-46% voted for Republicans, or, you know, the handful of extras on the ballot, which kind of lines up with the opinion polls about Trump, basically. So I think you have a hardcore of Trump supporters. You know, his opinion, you know, his approval has not, you know, it's hovered in the 40-45% range for a long time. And then you've got the core Democrats who are very worked up. And then you've got these, a lot of, you know, people who have been moderates or been, you know, more moderate Republicans, say, a lot of the suburban women, of course. You get that 10% or so that have come over to the Democrats. The problem for the Democrats, of course, is that they're people, particularly this cycle, we're not well distributed geographically, right?
Sure.
So the natural outcome of that is we get the House, which reflects the popular vote more, and then But we lost ground in the sand, absolutely. I will say one thing that's really interesting is some of these ballot measures that passed. Like three states, I forget which one's off the top of my head, I think Colorado is one, Michigan maybe, they passed redistricting rules, you know, basically like independent commissions
right.
that will draw the next set of districts rather than politicians. I think we talked about this before,
right.
but my first substantive political experience was working a redistricting special session in the Texas legislature in 1992. I literally walked into a smoke-filled room to bring my boss a message, right? So redistricting is a process near and dear to my heart, and I would love to see the politics taken out of it as much as possible.
Sure.
So, and then the third, another ballot initiative I wanted to point out is the one in Florida that Florida was one of, I believe, only five states that did not restore voting rights to felons after they, you know, completed their time and everything.
Right.
So Florida voted to restore voting rights to nonviolent, specifically nonviolent felons. And frankly, because of the war on drugs, one in five black men was not able to vote in Florida this year because, you know, they didn't commit a violent crime. They committed a drug crime, basically. So I think these are all things that, to me, are good for American democracy in the broad sense, right? But from a democratic point of view, I think we have a lot of persuading to do. And, you know, some of that will be digital, like in my world, you know, online advertising, that kind of thing. But a lot more of it needs to be over the dinner table and at the bar and at the church and wherever people meet. It's very hard for liberal views to break through into the world of Trump supporters because of the dominance of talk radio and Fox News, right? It's just that people who watch Fox News don't get much news from anywhere else, where people who come at it, you know, the people who are not, you know, hardcore Fox viewers, they're getting their news from a much wider variety of sources. And so it's very hard for liberal ideas to break through. So I think the Democrats need to have heartfelt conversations with people to understand where folks are coming from and to introduce them to things that they may simply have never even heard.
Well, you know, that's interesting. One thing about the ballot initiatives as well, Michigan, you mentioned them. They also passed, I believe it was called the Cheech and Chong Act, which will bring a different kind of smoke-filled rooms north of Ohio State border in the time to come.
Well, God bless them.
So I knew I had to get that one in there. But I want to mention something as well here, sort of big picture. And there is something of a dichotomy that I see on your side of the aisle that you may not very well see as a dichotomy. Redistricting, that kind of stuff, look, nobody can intellectually defend gerrymandering. I'm with you on that one. And yes, it has benefited Republicans disproportionately. And that is something that is going to have to be accounted for. And I think you're going to see a lot less of that in the 2020s, not least of which because of the Democrats' success in a lot of state houses this time around. One of the things, it's interesting to me because this is something that goes beyond Trump, but there's a lot of talk on the left, and there has been the last couple of years about this thing being anti-American, that thing being, it goes against the fabric of our country. But then at the same time, it's F the founding fathers because the Senate is undemocratic and the Electoral College is undemocratic, which I actually agree with. It is undemocratic. We're a constitutional republic, not a democracy, and I will plant my flag and say I think there needs to be something to protect against the tyranny of the majority, and we have these institutions in place for that. But I'm hearing a lot of talk yet again after the election this time, you know, look at the number of popular votes out there. Look at how does a state like Wyoming have the same power as a state like California in the Senate? So there's a lot of that kind of sentiment on the left that I've only really seen in recent years. I have not seen that much beyond the last couple of years looking back. Maybe it's always been there, but I've seen that only more recently.
Well, it's become more of an issue considering that of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the last presidential races. Oh, 6, 7 if you count Clinton. The Republicans have only won the popular vote once, and yet they have won the presidency three separate elections, 2000, 2004,
yep,
and 2016. So the reason you hear more about it now is because it makes a difference now, right? When it didn't make that much of a difference, you didn't hear that much about it. But, you know, here's an another number that the study that came out, I think the paper may have been in the, they were talking it up in the Atlantic or the Post. I forget which is in what. But they were talking about how both Democratic and Republican congressional staff thought that they think that their constituents are hold more conservative policy positions than they actually do.
Mm-hmm.
Authors tried to figure out what it was. One thing that seemed to correlate with it was how recently a lobbyist had visited them, right? Because the lobbyists get up the hill all the time. They can, they basically make their case every day. And so it kind of bleeds over by osmosis. I think the staffers start to think, oh, everyone's like this. You know, everyone thinks more this way. But, on things like everything from universal health, they picked several specific issues. The Democrats, I think on average, thought their constituents were 6, 8, 10% more conservative than they actually were. The Republicans thought their constituents were about 30% more conservative than they actually were. That, to me, is absolutely fascinating and goes to something deeply undemocratic, which is the power of lobbyists, right?
Right.
Yeah. But to get back to the Electoral College thing.
And the Senate as well, because there's a sense that the Senate's the same way.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. No. So here's the thing. You hear more grumbling on the left than screaming. The people on television are paid to be dramatic, right?
Okay. But, I'm going by Twitter, too. Twitter as well.
Again, that's not a representative sample of humanity, thank God.
Okay,
right?
All right.
But there are activists who are really worked up about it. But nothing's going to happen. What are you going to do? Hold a constitutional convention? God help us all, man. Who knows what gets in there?
Right.
So we're stuck with it. We have to live with it. But, if we get to a point where a Senate that is elected by an older, whiter America that is a dwindling minority, and a Supreme Court that was confirmed by that Senate, if that is what is constraining the vast majority of Americans from, basically if it's keeping them from evolving the country in the way they want it to, that's going to be a problem. The Senate may flip in the long run, whatever. But if the Supreme Court is way more conservative than the people, that's a recipe for constitutional problems. I'm not saying what's going to happen or da-da-da-da-da, but that kind of imbalance has, not always worked out well in the past. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's, again, controversy in terms of major issues before the Supreme Court. And that's why the Kavanaugh battle was so substantial because, I think it did swing the balance here, and it did, swing a lot of the red Senate races here. More about that
actually,
in a second. You think it did?
Yeah, I've just seen numbers that suggested that Kavanaugh cut slightly more to the Democrats than the Republicans.
Oh, interesting.
I think,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, my God, you're talking Montana.
Yeah.
One of the Dakotas. I can't off my head. I mean, these are really rural, conservative places.
Well, wait a minute. South Dakota, Heidi Heitkamp buried herself voting against him. That was the big swing against her when she voted
already,
against
Kavanaugh. She was already 10 or 15 points back in the polls. She knew she was doomed. Just wanted to be able to look at her. I think she wanted to be able to look at herself in the mirror. She knew she was going to lose.
Sincerely, the Tooth Fairy, but okay. But that's,
I mean, she told me. I mean, look how bad she got beat.
Well, yeah.
They can look. I mean, they're doing internal polling. They knew what was going to happen. Candidates can lie to themselves or they can be honest. And she's been around politics for a long time.
Okay.
My suspicion is, and this is based on a couple of things I've read, but I can't remember if it's like former staff of hers, saying, this is the kind of person she is or whatever. But no, I think she voted her convictions, and I think that she can hold her head up tall.
Well, we'll get back to the Senate races and the House races here in a second. I want to circle back also to something you were talking about when you were talking about the Senate and the Electoral College, and from a historical perspective here, because there's a historical perspective, and you and I are both fluent in this kind of stuff and enjoy talking about it, that as you're looking at these trend lines, and when you were talking about the perception of Congress people being more conservative than they are or more liberal than they are, these studies, as far as I'm going to direct it towards members of Congress, because I don't remember if I think it might have been Vox that was doing a thing that was like the Republicans have become so radical over the decades. I was looking at a study that they had done as far as votes and everything. And I'm looking at that and I'm going, how is there no accounting for in looking at this? When you look at the exponential growth of government over the last 50 to 60 years, we have a government that would make Hubert Humphrey look like he was a member of the John Birch Society as far as what he was advocating. So I'm looking at this going,
conservatives mean what they say.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, Colin. How can they call themselves truly conservative when they're voting for this bloated government? How is that not being taken into account? Because even the ones that are the best on this, like my beloved Rand Paul, has probably cast a few votes for the behemoth Uncle Sam over a period of time. So how is that not getting taken into account when we keep hearing about the radical Republicans who, to me, have bent over and grabbed their ankles on the size of government over the last 50 to 60 years? You know, I'm looking at it like, what's going on here? What gives?
Well, you have a definition of conservatism that David Brooks would admire, right?
That's an insult.
Well, I know, but, you know, David Brooks thinks he's eccentric. He's hilarious. Anyway, we don't need to go into him. He just makes stuff up.
Yes.
The thing is that if you view conservative as a set of ideological principles,
yes,
your question is very real. If instead you treat the modern conservative, you're not going to like this, but you treat the modern conservative movement as a white identity movement, it makes perfect sense because they're delivering benefits to their constituents.
Yeah.
In the form of Social Security and da da da. And the things that they try to cut are the benefits that their constituency, feels are going to be wrong people, even though a majority of Medicaid recipients are white people. White people conceive of that as a program that helps brown and black people, therefore they're against it. It's a perfect example. If you go across the country in school districts that have an aging white population, voting population, but the classrooms are majority people of color, towns don't vote as much funding for education.
Yeah.
You know? So, yes, if you are a believer in the ideas,
yes,
right?
Yes.
But
quaint though they are,
I don't think your average Republican Congress member has had an idea in his life other than, I say this stuff and I get elected.
Sure. Sure, and that's, and again, in looking at that, yeah, I knew you would have an interesting take on it, and I agree with you. I think that's exactly right there as far as, again, that they have abandoned, actually. But again, it is, as we segue back into the election, sort of a perfect encapsulation of the age of Trump, because we talked about this the last time you were on there. Everything now is about OMG, drinking liberal tears, and everything like that, and And I got to say, because, you know, in terms of talking to my BFF, who, you know, over the years, I think we've generally been fairly close on the spectrum. But he, God help him, with all due respect, I think has sort of, you know, gone down the rabbit hole as far as, you know, the not necessarily Fox News, but he's getting his news from places like that, radio shows and whatever. Maybe to some degree, but, you know, I was talking to him last week, and he couldn't believe that the Democrats were about to take over the House. And I said, yeah, they're going to. And, you know, I said to him, I said at the time, I said, your boy Trump, with all this stuff, I said, he's got all the people already, all the caravan people. I said, my dad's already voting for, you know, these candidates. He doesn't, you know, like, he's got all those people. I said, it's going to be a massacre in the suburbs. And I said to him, I said, the biggest thing about this guy being a dumbass is he ran the first time on Make America Great Again, and there are people that are going to be out there taking issue with him taking credit for the economy or whatever, but with the economy being the way it is, relative peace in the world, about as close as we ever get these days, peace and prosperity, about as close as you get in the modern era, why is he not out there running around saying, I made America great again? Why is he not beating them on that? And yes, you can do scare tactics on, if the Democrats get in there, this will all get taken away. I said, but why do you not run a message where you can pull people in who aren't already inclined to vote for you? Again, I'm a communications major, you know, going back to my college days. That's how I look at these things, and I'm a political strategist at heart. So I'm looking at this, and my best friend's looking at me like I got a third eyeball growing out the middle of my forehead. And I texted him the night of the election. I said, I told you so. And he's like, what do you mean? Trump saved the Senate and everything. So, I mean, the people that are already...
Wow.
Yeah, I mean... Yes, yes. I mean, well, look, I think credit where credit's due. I think Trump did have an effect on the red seats flipping and the red state seats flipping in the Senate. I think the rallies and everything like that did have something to do with it. But I think he still could have had rallies. I think he could have had a message out there that wasn't dependent on the whole caravan slash invasion thing. I think there's a way he could have done it where it wasn't off-putting to a lot of voters in the suburbs who massacred the Republicans and who are poised to tip the balance in 2020. And that's the lesson I don't think Trump learned from this. So it's a thing where I think I probably look at this a lot of the same ways that you do, as far as I'll give credit in the limited ways for where I think he had an effect, but I think there is so much upside that he left on the table as far as limiting the losses in the House.
Well, I'll tell you what. If he had an effect, I'm going to wait for the numbers to show it and not Trump's mouth, right?
Right.
Just because he tells me he made a difference doesn't mean I have to believe he can. I want to see numbers. The other thing, another point about his campaigning, almost every phrase that came out of his mouth contained a lie. Remember the 10% tax cut?
Yeah.
Congress wasn't even in session. Democrats do not want to open the borders. There is no reputable, you know, like other than a fringe candidate somewhere saying open the borders. This is not what Democrats want. We just don't want ICE agents to strip children away from their parents, and we want us to follow our own laws around applications for refugee status. Little details like that. You know, he lied every day, and this is, you know, he lied every day, and it would get reported, and we all just put it in the file folder in our heads that Trump's lying again. This is how you erode the common consensus that makes democracy work. You know, when Democrats talk about being afraid of Trump and democracy, yeah, there are people out there who make Hitler comparisons and all this. It is always useful to study, you know, past authoritarian-style leaders. But one of the things that, you know, authoritarians do is they overwhelm people with lies until the very concept, it's almost like you wear people out until they're listless, you know?
Yeah.
And this is what, and he's, you know, I think for Trump, it's an instinct, and it has worked extremely well for him. His entire career is built on lies, right?
Yeah.
You know, he says, I got $1 million loan from his father, and here we find out that his father transferred, like, how much? I forget, $200-400 million to him, bailed him out of innumerable tons. You know, everything is built on lies. So, you know, I guess the kind of person who's drawn to this just kind of instinctively knows to do that. But another point about your friend is that he's a he, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Men are much more likely to fall for this. And actually, something that is somewhat concerning to me is the kind of the young Trump bros that I read about at rallies. And I know how guys are in groups, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's good to belong to something. It's fun. But, it's like with the Bernie bros. The Bernie bros were actively harassing Hillary Clinton supporters. I mean, obviously overgeneralizing. There were people among the Bernie bros who were actively harassing Clinton supporters.
Sure.
Bros. So, you know.
Beto bros also.
Yeah. Well, I haven't heard about Beto bros doing anything wrong, though.
Okay.
If you got anything, let me know. I'd love to hear it.
They just amused me.
The average Bezos supporter was like a middle-aged woman, I think, you know. actually, the average Bernie supporter was a middle-aged woman, too.
Right.
Anyway, your average Bernie supporter was more conservative than your average Hillary supporter when you actually did the polling. But with your friend, you know, he's getting his information from a handful of sources that don't, and here's the key thing, that don't have journalistic standards, right? If the Washington Post, the New York Times, or NPR, or as vapid as it is, CNN, you know, if they make a mistake, like the Post gets out a correction as fast as it can, even on something trivial, you know, like a slight misspelling of someone's name, that kind of thing. Breitbart does not have journalistic standards, right? They happily ran fake edited videos of you know, the James O'Keefe stuff, you know?
Right.
So these people are getting information from one set of sources that have free reign to lie to them.
Well, and here's the thing, too, and this is a thing where, again, and I'm, listen, as somebody who, and I watch a decent amount of both CNN, MSNBC, I'm very contemptuous of a lot of the professional anti-Trumpers on there, who they have, you know, and that's the thing, like, I am not one of the, and again, I'm barely even a Republican. I'm registered as a Republican as far as how I identify. But I mean, I am not a Republican anti-Trumper. I am somebody who tries to approach things more or less as they're unfolding. But it's and I'm contemptuous of the Nicole Wallaces of the world and all of them. So, but it's a thing where, you know, to my best friend who by the way I'm going to get an earful from him at the bowling alley this week for using him as an example. You know, of all of this kind of stuff, he's going to give me some grief and probably justifiably so. But it's a thing where I will tell you this, because I bring things up again that are, you know, of the untruths that are getting used. And why would you even need to bother with this? Because it's a thing where, again, if my guy, Rand Paul, had been elected president, okay, look, you wouldn't agree with probably the vast majority of things, maybe a handful of things and you know, on things, because Rand does sort of transcend right-left on a few issues here, as we've talked about over a period of time. But it would be a thing of where I don't think you'd be throwing around the L word quite as much. I think you'd be talking about disagreements and everything like that. And I would be proud that I was being represented by somebody who was, from my point of view anyways, adhering to the truth and whatever. Like, that still matters to me. It's a thing of where there is a lot of who cares on the right. There's a lot of, well, you know what? Yeah, it's rattling the cage of the media. Again, I talked about this last time around, the whole drinking liberal tears narrative, although Amanda Carpenter on CNN, who is decrying the whole drinking liberal tears thing, I remember her during the Bush years. Like, when did she get to be purer than now? You know what I mean? Like, there's some professional, you know, some of the never-Trump people on the right, I think, tend to forget that they used to do a lot of the same kind of stuff. But it's a thing where, yes, there is a post-truth kind of a thing on the right, or a who cares about the truth segment out there, and that is something that I find worrisome, because again, you and I I'm sure are not going to agree on what I'm about to say, but when you look at the economic record of the last 2 years and other things from a policy standpoint the last 2 years, there's a lot that I think you could at the very least wouldn't have to run on. You wouldn't agree with me if I said be proud of, but I would say, as far as some of the substantive policy things, the things that happen under the radar of what he's even focusing on, quite frankly, at the cabinet level, you know, again, you don't, from my perspective, you don't need to do that. And it's a thing where to believe that it will never come back to bite you is incredibly short-sighted, because it will. It will. The media always gets the last word, whether you want to believe it or not.
Wow, yeah, a lot there. You know, here is the trick. So much of, look, lowering taxes does not boost economic growth unless your tax rate's like 90%.
Wherever the tipping point is, we're below the tipping point. I agree with you on that.
And Glenn Hubbard knows that.
Yes.
Right? And
yes.
He continues to spout this. You know?
Yes.
When part of the modern Republican myth is that the Democrats are the party of Jim Crow, and the Democrats are the inheritors, that the Republicans are the, you know, they have a nice clean record because Barry Goldwater supposedly, no, wait, Barry Goldwater voted against the Voting Rights Act. But, what's his name, National Review, through Buckley, the founder of the Birchers out. Although he was very happy to have the Birchers there, he just repudiated that one guy.
Well, Buckley, and that, if you go back to, you know, the Eisenhower-Nixon years in the 50s, they weren't as active as the Democrats in the 60s, but they were pushing some modified, limited civil rights legislation in keeping with what had been the Republican tradition. Yes.
And then in 1968, yes. Richard Nixon realized he could win election if he turned racist Democrats into racist Republicans. That is the Southern strategy. That's the dog whistle, right? The talk about busing and talk about law and order and crime to scare white people about black people. And then those people gradually, over time, their politicians started doing it, you know. There used to be plenty of Republican senators who started out as Southern racist Democrats, right?
Yeah.
but yet, you know, in public, the party does not, that is not a part of the current, you know, foundational myth of the Republican Party. It's really hard to escape the lies. And honestly, I think that when you're talking about college-educated white women, right?
Yeah.
Because college-educated black women and not college-educated black women are pretty much on the same page. But with white women, you know, if you go to college, you know, you get a little contact, hopefully. You get out of your hometown or whatever. And, but you also tend to be taught a certain respect for evidence-based thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one reason that suburban women have turned away from Trump. Is they sense I don't know if we can say bullshit on the radio, but they sense that there's a load there, right?
Yeah.
You know, this whole, like, global warming is a Chinese hoax and all this stuff. You know, it's like, guys, you know, if you've had a few science classes, you tend to understand how the scientific method works a little bit. So, you know... basically, that is one of the mechanisms through which the lying hurts the party in the long run.
Well, and that's it. That's it. I feel like it plays into a narrative that's already there. That it's unfortunate. You don't have to feed it yourselves, you know?
Well, and you know, there was a great characterization. I was reading an article on Fox News' coverage of the midterms. What they were going to focus on. Slate.com has done periodically do a series where they assign someone to watch big chunks of Fox News all day and then just basically write about it and see what they see. But, I forgot. I went down a hole and I totally forgot what I was about to say.
Happens to all of us.
That's gone. Maybe it'll come back.
Well, you know what? What a great segue to, we'll get back to the politics here, but this seems the perfect moment to bring up. You have a very special occasion coming up here in terms of the aging process, which may or may not tie into the senior moment you just had there.
Well, remember, you talk about ballot initiatives that, marijuana has been legal in D.C. for a long time.
That's right.
So what was the question? I'm making myself laugh too much here.
Well, yeah, but something you had mentioned off air about an approaching life milestone.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I will be having a very large birthday on Saturday, and I've been practicing with three different rock and roll bands. We're all going to fly. My mom is in town. She's going to be there. I've got two of my siblings here. I might even have two girlfriends from the summer when I was 14 years old.
Wow.
I know. This is going to be a hoot.
If there's a cat fight, please upload that on Periscope.
Now, I'm more afraid they'll all have a mind meld and just turn on me with knives or something.
Well, that is the kind of thing that can keep you from remembering a point here. But as far as cognitive functions go, I will tell you, I think I was relatively close in my predictions. I posted them on our Twitter account at the FDH Lounge the night before. And again, to where I feel like the Republicans kind of beat the spread a little bit here, I actually... I didn't make as much out of the early voting numbers that showed the Republicans running stronger than usual, which I suspect had something to do with the outcome. I had the Republicans coming out even in the Senate, and we don't know what the final numbers are going to be, but they look like they're going to be at least plus two on that. I thought the Democrats would be plus 10 on the governors. I think they ended up plus six on the count there, and actually Real Clear Politics has them at, plus seven. In the House, I said Democrats plus 36, and we're a ways away from knowing all the outcomes, but I might be right on the nose by the time that's all said and done. I'm probably the closest.
Yeah,
I think I'm going to be pretty close on that one. I oversold what the Democrats were going to do on the other two sides there.
Right.
So that's where I got the sense that the Republicans in the governorships and in the Senate did better than expected. I'll tell you, like living in Ohio, I was talking to somebody the other day, that it's a thing where, and again, Sherrod Brown won his thing going away, but you look at everything else, and there was thought to be a slight Democratic lean this year, or even at best, and just and all the statewide offices, which again control the apportionment board in the state, which again we have passed something that's going to even out the apportionment process from here on in, so there's not as much power attached to that.
Yeah.
But still, Republicans swept the board. And by an average of about 4 or 5 points, and I'm sitting here going, I didn't see this coming. I thought the Republicans were going to split those seats maybe because the Democrats had some relatively strong candidates for those seats there. So, and this happened in a number of different seats where Republicans pulled out races that they were not expected to pull out. So I'm obviously not going to just take Trump's account of it, but I'm looking at the final polling. I'm looking at the polling in the closing days.
Sure.
And I'm telling you that in the Senate and the governor races, I was fooled myself on this. So I do think there's, I think Trump hurt them badly in the House, and I think that that is something he's going to end up paying the price for. But to say that he didn't help them in the Senate and the governor's races in those targeted areas, I don't think I can say that truthfully.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know, because it all comes down to, like, one of my gut feelings versus another one of my gut feelings, right? If I was going to be totally realistic, think about this. The Democrats held on in West Virginia, where Trump won by, what, like 35 points?
Yeah.
Every one of those seats that they lost was a state that Trump had won by double digits. It was, I think there was, irrational exuberance about the stock market. I think there was irrational exuberance on the left, and I think it crept over into the talking heads on TV.
Yeah.
I know that I personally was choosing to pay more attention to polls that were more favorable to Democrats. And I remember saying to myself, well, I like this one better. I'm trying to be totally transparent with myself. I like this one better. You know? So I think if you're going to take a hard cold look at the numbers, in a regular off-year election, you would have expected the Democrats to lose several seats in the Senate under these circumstances, and then they would have made small gains in the House, but nothing like what we got. I mean, this is going to be the biggest Democratic gain. I think it's going to end up being the biggest one since the Watergate year.
That's right.
Yeah, so you can't say this was trivial.
Right.
With a normal Republican president, this would have been a blowout for Republicans, honestly.
Well, in what sense? I mean, they probably still would have lost the House, yes?
I don't know.
Okay.
In 2004, that was a weird, or in 2004, in 2002, that was a weird year because 9/11.
Well, in 98, you got to throw those out because Clinton benefited from the impeachment backlash. 98 and 02 were the outliers. Generally, presidents take it on the chin, and usually in their first midterms especially. I mean, even Reagan in 82. So it's normal for that to happen
also,
to some degree. But this
Reagan
is where,
during,
you know.
Reagan was during a recession, too, though.
Yeah, that's
right?
True. That's
like,
true.
Like, yeah, it's just really hard to get. So basically what we're trying to do is extrapolate from our guesses.
Right. Well, yeah.
Yeah. And draw conclusions about the state of the political world.
Sure.
I'm not going to do that, right? I just don't know enough yet.
Right.
But, what I do know is that there are millions of Americans out there that I think could change their minds if they were exposed to the right message from the right messengers in the right places.
Right.
It's better, the best is if it's somebody from their family or an old friend, right?
Right.
If not, you know, a community organizer or a neighbor, if not that, a Facebook ad, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of people that I think the Democrats could peel away, and it doesn't take much, just a few million, you know? But especially, you know, I suspect women are going to be a little more open. But not by a ton. White, you know, especially working class white women are you know, pretty heavily in for Trump. So yeah, I think there's a lot of work to be done. That's what I come out of this. And thank you, incidentally, for the opportunity to talk about this, because these sorts of things are ticking over in the back of my mind right now. I'm going to work on a set of ideas that I'll put out just as a set of recommendations for Democrats. Like, hey guys, why don't we try doing this? And see if it gets anywhere. And this is, you know, when I go off track, I'm kind of like, half the time, I'm like thinking about how all this fits into those ideas, you know. Yeah, that's very much what I'm focused on right now.
Sure.
I just know that there's so much pontificating out there about what things mean and this and that, and I don't know if we help the world by adding to it.
No, that's true. That's true. And that's, listen, you know, you and I are adding some positive value here as far as, again, with our pithy insights and analysis. Let's not sell that short. But
our job, my friend.
Well, exactly. And then as well as, again, from our differing political views here, you know, we're having a lot of fun with this. We're breaking it down. And again, in these tense times, you know, when you have, you know, Antifa protesters, as you noted off air, at Tucker Carlson's place, Jim Acosta practicing kung fu on a White House intern at a press conference here. You know, these are...
That video was edited. Go look at the side-by-side. That's just gross.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. His chops were fast as lightning.
Don't make me sing. I'll sing if you make me.
You know, again, you know, tense times in the world. And as you said off air, and I think correctly so, the Tucker Carlson thing, you know, particularly gross. This whole notion that everybody is fair game 24/7 in this day and age, this is something where, and as I said to you, I wouldn't have necessarily expected that it would have been a universal backlash towards what happened to his family, but there has been, and I think that's kind of heartening. That's a good first step.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of this gets, you know, like any form of social etiquette, right? We got to figure out the rules here. I think that people should be allowed and encouraged to speak with their elected representatives if they encounter them in public. I don't think it helps anybody if they scream and yell at them, you know?
Yeah.
Now, the two women in the elevator with Jeff Flake, that one, I'm with them on that. But, you know, when they come up to people in the restaurant and start booing them or whatever, I don't think that helps. If you come up to them in a restaurant and say, you know, Senator McConnell, I respect your position, but I think that this and this and this that you are doing are wrong for the country, and walk away. I think that is perfectly legitimate. The Antifa types, yeah, they're basically self-gratifying twits, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't know any of them terribly well. I know a couple of people who are, you know, in or around that group who are, you know, very self-righteous and very convinced that they're right. I think that they're putting their short-term emotional gratification ahead of the good for everybody. I mean, it's corrosive to our public discourse, right? It's corrosive to democracy, to the trust that democracy depends on. But the other thing is, from a tactical point of view, it's stupid. All you do is give Fox News ammunition. You are helping the other side. And, you know, across the country, these really are just a few hundred people, right? This
yeah.
is not a mass part of the Democratic movement. It's mostly younger, people who have convinced themselves they're right, but also who get a kick out of being bad boys. And that's just not good for anybody.
Well, as far as people on who are undermining your point of view with everything they're saying, welcome to my world, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity. You know, welcome to where I've been living over a period of time. Yeah, I mean,
good
we all live to be undermined by other people who are seeking to represent and speak for us. I've been having that happen for as long as I can remember. You know, on my side of the spectrum here. So, yeah, it's not that I don't have a little bit of sympathy for you on that, but I will say this. I touched on this last time on the show as we start to kind of bring this full circle and looking ahead, that I brought this up. And that you talk about playing into Trump's hands. He's going with the 1972 playbook, acid amnesty and abortion, that he used against McGovern.
True.
He wants mobs. He was testing out the mobs, not jobs thing this time around here. I mean, the whole thing of, like, getting fired up, and I can say this without fear of anybody on the left side of the spectrum actually listening to me and heeding the advice, but it's a thing where, you know, the whole thing, the abolish ICE signs at the rallies. Let me tell you something. Every abolish ICE sign is going to pay itself over 10 times fold for Trump when the super PACs start running their ads and everything like that. Because there is that fringe that is in favor of these things, and part of Trump's path to re-election is making that fringe speak for you guys. So you are right to be concerned about that.
I'm with you. However, I want to abolish ICE. I don't want to open the borders. My grandfather was a Border Patrol officer.
Okay.
ICE did not exist until the act that created the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah.
This is not a thing that has been around for a long time. It's separate from the Border Patrol.
Right.
ICE's job is functionally to terrorize people who are here, you know? There, if you read details, you know, here's the kind of thing. A lot of the people who get into ICE, the individual enforcement officers, wanted to be in the FBI or wanted to be at the Justice Department. They wanted to be in another federal law enforcement agency, but they weren't qualified. So ICE gets the leftovers. I'm obviously exaggerating. I'm sure that there are, you know, officers out there who are perfectly competent. But, you know, you'll see these internal messages that they pass around that are downright racist. you know, when they're going to be taking children away from parents, no one is competent enough to figure out that maybe they should put this spreadsheet together so that they can click people back up later, you know? That I think ICE is harmful to, I think it's corrosive to American values in a lot of ways, that there are other ways to solve these problems. Now, the problem is that Fox News and the right-wing media machine take the concept of get rid of this bad agency and turn it into, they want to open the borders and let rapists come across and attack your grandmother. Those are not the same, you know, the Fox News version of what liberals believe is not what liberals believe. Nobody will open the borders except a couple of fringe people. But the Stop ICE signs, one, you can't make people not do that, right? They feel this very passionately. It's heartfelt. You can't make people not do that, but the problem with abolish ICE isn't abolishing ICE. It's that that position gets warped into something that it is not, and it's done that way for a purely political purpose. It's a lie.
In terms of everything you just said about ICE, this is a thing of let he who is without sin throw the first stone. As I look back at the 90s and the ATF and what they did after Ruby Ridge and everything like that, I can't say I've never spoken of a federal agency the way you just did. So, you know, I've been there.
No, man, The Atlantic had a really good breakdown, a look into what went wrong at ICE, especially over the last couple of years. But it has a lot of detail. I can't remember when it was. It's probably over the summer or maybe late summer. But it's in the Atlantic. The Atlantic is doing really good in-depth pieces nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, this is an agency that has fundamental problems, and it's not sacred and sacrosanct. It was created as part of the terrible legislation that created the Department of Homeland Security, an incredibly inefficient piece of bureaucracy. I used to have a girlfriend who worked there who sometimes, she was a contractor. She would sometimes sit at her desk for days with absolutely nothing to do, but she could not read a book or a magazine because then she wouldn't look busy.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
When you talk about stuff with government and bygone things and whatever, something that in 2018 is a hate crime for me to even talk about, accurately. Going back to the 1950s, the name of the deportation program we had, I shiznit you not, America, it was called Operation Wetback in the Eisenhower years.
It was a one-time thing.
Yes.
Operation Wetback was a one-time thing in, like, 54,
yep.
I think. Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, and nobody will believe us, but go to the internet, kids, look it up, it actually happened, that was the name of it, that's what the government called it at the time. And apparently that must have predated the National Council of Raza or anyone who would have said anything at the time.
Well, it was a different era, and also it was relatively small scale. It was one of the few times that was the thing. They didn't used to do a ton of these raids, you know, they didn't used to throw people out that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the particularly gross thing about all the border stuff is, of course, that, you know, border crossings are way down from 15 years ago.
Yes, they are.
That's a long-term trend.
Yeah.
The majority, by a long shot, of the people who come into this country, or who are in this country illegally, are here because they overstayed a visa.
Right.
A tourist visa or a student visa. I mean, my God, I've been served by an Irish bartender in Boston who's illegal, you know?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
It happens.
So, you know, they hype this border stuff, but that's not even the problem.
Right, right. And that's, and again, and separating fact from fiction is kind of a tough thing here, but, you know, that's something you and I are able to do as we're looking at this, as we've gone through over the years, only closing in on the better part of a decade now of doing these
pretty
segments.
Funny, right?
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun looking at the second half of the Trump years, just as we have in the... in the first half, and as a little bit of a preview of what lies ahead here, it's funny because FDH golf editor Tom Denk, who is somebody who certainly sits on your side of the spectrum, texted me yesterday about there being a constitutional crisis because it was right after the AG had been fired. And I texted him back. I was like, wow, that's the first time I've ever heard my party didn't win the Senate called a constitutional crisis.
Oh, no, it's Jeff Sessions. Yeah, it's a session.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, but you're just messing with it. Well, yeah, well, you know, there's a big article on Slate.com today, another site that's doing really good work these days. A constitutional scholar looking at, you know, basically his appointment. It's not the firing of if it were determined that the firing amounted to obstruction of justice, it's a problem in itself. But his appointment of the chief of staff apparently turned out to violate the direct wording of the Constitution.
Well, we've already overlooked the emoluments clause, so maybe that's one more that we'll...
Well, but here's the trick. If I remember the article right, anyone being prosecuted by a federal prosecutor could... because the federal prosecutor's authority is delegated from the attorney general.
Mm-hmm.
They could challenge their trial and say that, you know, the attorney general was not, you know, put into office under the Constitution, you know, following the rules of the Constitution. Therefore, he's not a valid attorney general. Therefore, any prosecution he brings is invalid. And they could win.
Wow. Well,
that's pretty crazy.
I, if that started happening, I think the worm would turn with a few of these Trump voters.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, if they get somebody through the Senate pretty quickly, it'll never get tested, right?
Right, right.
So it's got to be somebody who's been through confirmation.
Well,
it's part of the advise and consent clause in the Constitution.
Well, I mean, it's a thing where, again, Trump is looking at it like he's got a padded majority now in the Senate. He's not going to be relying on one or two votes and, you know, getting held hostage by Collins and Murkowski and everything anymore. So, yeah, I think that's what he's looking at in a clearer path for somebody to get through. But, yeah, that's going to be fascinating to follow. all the comings and goings here. Trump with a divided government is somehow going to be even more fascinating than Trump with a unified government. So we have that to look forward to, at least from an entertainment standpoint as we go along here. But again, always a pleasure, Colin. And again, I wish you all the best on your impending milestone birthday here. may it be so great that you remember none of it afterwards. And yeah, it should be a real blast. But it's always a blast doing segments with you, my friend.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And thank you for voting kids, exercising your democratic rights.
I did indeed. And yeah, it was a very interesting election, and it will be a very interesting time to come following that. We'll be tracking all of it here on the show. Thank you again, Colin, for being on the show today. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 1060.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.